This is Guardian Radio, your station for up-to-the-minute news, intelligent, interactive, and engaging conversation. 96.9 FM. The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the position of the management and staff of Guardian Network.
The Revolution with Warren McCartney is sponsored by Fidelity Bank Bahamas, J.S. Johnson, Commonwealth Bank, Bahamas Bus and Truck, Burger King, Ron's Electric Motors, Popeyes, and Bonneville Bones.
Good afternoon, Bahamas, and welcome to The Revolution here on Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. My name is Juan McCartney. So good to have you with us. I see that we are still going through the thick of it with regard to the shanty town and the residents. I see you're protesting. That's cute, the kids. It's cute and sad as well. But we're not going to be talking about shanty towns today, as appealing as that may sound. We're going to be discussing a couple of things, mainly the upcoming budget debate and what's in this budget. All right, so budget debate starts on Wednesday. We'll get to hear the Prime Minister and the Minister of Finance elaborate on some of the reasoning behind some of the decisions made. I told you all got mad at me the first day to give the PM credit and do this and do that. Now you've heard the financial experts weigh in, and there is cause for concern from the business community. They've expressed the concern about the spending, about the debt. We've heard from accountants, from lawyers, from different industry stakeholders, and there is a large level of concern about what it is that is going on. And what it is that's going on is we're just seem to be operating as if it's we're just going to push this thing through and let's ride till the wheels fall off. We're not going to act like or acknowledge there's a looming debt crisis coming our way. We don't want to talk about the debt. That's what they say. We want to talk about all the good things that are going on in the budget. We're going to talk about the budget and the things that are going on and what the impact might be. Last week you asked me, well, what was my idea, right? And I explained to you for the purposes of that discussion, it didn't matter what my idea was because we're talking about what will be. This budget will pass. There will be maybe one or two minor alterations. But this is the road we're headed down. Make no doubt, mistake about it. And so for that discussion, it was kind of futile to talk about, well, what else would you do? For today, we could talk about that. We could talk about some of what else would I do as I see some of the moves being made or if we think that these are good moves that are being made, all right? We're going to get to that shortly, but before we do that, I did want to seek to help many of you out there because you're going to find yourselves, probably a number of you, in problems getting caught up in this election nonsense. And this is instructive for Dave. That doesn't mean call me Dave. I'm just saying it's instructive for you and those of you who speak very quickly without sometimes thinking through the ramifications of what it is that you are saying and where it can wind you up. I get this thing a lot where people come to me and they go, well, what about free speech? What about free speech, right? So there's no free speech, right? There's no free anything. For everything you do, there are consequences. So yes, you may say what you want, but there are actions that people can take under law and on their personal front that could adversely impact you, as free as you think the speech is, all right? So let me read some of this to you, and then you can understand kind of where I'm coming from to help you out so that you don't find yourself in major problems, because a lot of you are too exuberant for your own good, all right? Woman accused of defaming cabinet minister, Artesia Davis. A woman on Friday denied defaming cabinet minister Frankie Campbell in a WhatsApp voice note. Caprio Saunders, 49, of South Beach, appeared before Magistrate Samuel McKinney on a charge of intentional libel over a viral voice note. Prosecutors allege that Saunders made the recording in April 2021 with the intent to defame the Minister of Social Services when she accused him of impregnating the daughter of his alleged sweetheart. Saunders pleaded not guilty to the charge that carries the possibility of a maximum sentence of 2 years imprisonment. For his part, Campbell denied the repugnant claim in the House of Assembly. The magistrate granted Saunders $3,500 bail ahead of her July 5th trial. However, he warned Saunders that her bail could be revoked if she made any further commentary about Campbell or the case. Maria Daxon and Ben McKinney appeared for Saunders. Sergeant Vernon Pfeiffer and prosecuted. So this isn't the first person in recent times who's been arrested for saying something about a high-ranking politician. So the guy, one of the F&M guys, Facts and Issues or whatever his name was, he was arrested for alleging that Chester Cooper was hiding some sort of drug dealer on Exuma. What is going on with all of you? Why do you not understand that you should have some sort of care with people's reputations? Why don't you get that? Do you not possess the capacity for self-reflection to the extent that if it were you someone were saying these things about, that you know not to be true, that you would be outraged, embarrassed, you would seek to defend your reputation? So as we move along throughout the course of this campaign, please be guarded in what you say. You don't need to speak to anyone's personal conduct unless that conduct becomes a political issue, all right, or alleged personal conduct. So, for example, former finance minister Peter Turnquest was accused in a writ of orchestrating some sort of fraud regarding some companies he was a director of. Had nothing to do with his political capacity, but the specter of it overshadowed the capacity for him to do his job effectively, and then he resigned. And that was a matter that was put before the court, even though Turnquest wasn't sued. You guys just make up stuff. Frankie Campbell allegedly impregnated his sweetheart's daughter. What are you talking about? Chester Cooper's hiding a drug dealer on Exuma, allegedly? What the hell are you guys on? You can be passionate, you know. I see y'all still circulating the voice note of the day after the last Christie administration lost, and that y'all ain't cut me my check yet, and that's fine. But you can be passionate. But stick to the facts. Stick to what's germane. Y'all are losing y'all minds, right? Who, this one is a sissy, and this one got, yeah, what are y'all doing? You just want to poison the well? Someone said you're getting paid. You're not getting paid enough. Did you get paid more than $3,500 for the bail? Are you getting paid enough to pay the lawyer? So let's proceed with some sense, okay? I'm not calling anybody corrupt or a thief or none of that. I ain't getting into your business about your sweetheart and all this other stuff. Stop it. Please. Or you're going to find yourself in problems. And the people, you know what happens when you find yourself in problems? 9 out of 10? The people who put you up to it, to the darkness, they disappear. They won't touch you with a 10-foot pole. So it ain't worth it. All right? Just to chase clout or run out or whatever like that. And if you're getting paid, it still ain't worth it. So please, be minded as to what it is you're doing. All right, let's move on. See, I ain't going to no court. I'm not gonna get locked up. Y'all say whatever y'all want. That's on y'all. Right? And I ain't defending nobody who come with no crazy. More than once someone come, well, you ain't gonna say nothing. Say what? I must come behind an adult who made a decision about what they were gonna say and do what? I ain't saying nothing. You must see know how you could eat. You must see know how you could pay the lawyer. Me say no, sir. All right. The government is now presenting before you what it believes it will spend in the upcoming fiscal year and what it believes it will bring in terms of revenue in the upcoming fiscal year. There are a number of measures in there. There are a number of tax breaks. There are a number of programs where the government is putting money into. There's salaries. They're looking at some salary increases. Doesn't look like a broad-based salary increase or an increment. Sorry, madam, called by the public service. I don't see in there where there's any money for an additional increment for you guys. If the last one cost $60 million, that certainly ain't no nothing near that in here for y'all, right? There's a $29 million or so increase in the wage bill, but that ain't for y'all, right? So I don't see anything in there for you as far as your increment, all right? So the government's brought its budget, and it wants to convince you that its goals are achievable and attainable. Some of the things that they've said don't stack up with what I believe would be realism in terms of you're really going to get this money. So I don't think you've never gotten the money from gaming that you said you would get. So I don't know why you're projecting more money for gaming this time around, right? You always claim you're going to get all this overdue real property tax money. You got $11 million or so this fiscal year, I think, more than you thought you would get, or not more than you thought you would get. You got $11 million more out of the exercise you did. But there's not that bunch of money there, all right? You did a rebate program, not a rebate, a discount program, and you collected some back taxes, but a lot of that stuff's uncollectible, all right? And you're not going to realize it. So they've done some measures where you could trap some revenue, and they're doing a couple of other things where they're seeking to generate new streams of revenue, okay? And one of those things is an economic permanent residence regime, all right? Now, I will read to you what this is, but I'll let you know off the top that I do support this, all right? And a lot of y'all get nervous when you hear about foreigners and all that stuff like that, but I'm going to explain it to you. You ain't got to agree, right? But I do support it. So what we're looking at in terms of the economic permanent residence regime, and I'll read to you the story by Travis Cartwright Carroll, is that a new amendment to the Immigration Act will allow any person who's not a citizen of the Bahamas to apply for economic permanent residency if they either purchase a home in the country for a certain amount of money or if they make an investment in the country. The bill provides for the legal status of the surviving spouse and dependents of an economic permanent residence holder who dies as well. The Immigration Amendment Bill 2021 will amend the Principal Act to provide for the grant of an economic permanent residence. Anyone who's not a citizen or holder of a permanent residence certificate and who's purchased residence in the Bahamas for such an amount as may be prescribed from time to time by order of the minister, or made investments in the Bahamas of such kind and of such an amount as may be so prescribed, or both, and resides in the country for a cumulative period of no less than 90 days per year, may, upon application to the Immigration Board and payment of a fee, be granted economic permanent residence. That person would be allowed to reside permanently in the Bahamas and to engage in gainful occupation, one moment, Hey, good afternoon. So sorry, I'm on air at the moment, so I'll call you back, okay? 12 to 2, I'm on air every day, but I'll call you back. They continued to call after, here's the standard. If you call twice and there's no answer, I am busy. It's no disrespect to you. It's not that I don't rate you. It's just I can't talk to you at the moment. When that fails, you send a message. Hey, trying to have a word with you. Please give me a call. And then we go from there. All right. Now, let me continue. The bill provides you to reside permanently in the Bahamas and to engage in gainful occupation where that gainful occupation is in his own business. Currently, permanent residence in the Bahamas is granted to applicants who purchase a home for a certain amount of money. So let me explain that. If you purchase a home for a certain amount of money in the Bahamas, you are allowed to apply for expedited consideration of permanent residence. All right? We don't currently have a category where you just, bam, invest a certain amount of money or buy a house at a certain threshold, and there's a particular streamline for you to go in to get that economic permanent residence. Let me continue. According to the bill, an economic permanent residence certificate shall remain in force during the lifetime of the person or until it is revoked under Section 18 of the Immigration Act. It adds that holders of the certificate shall maintain ownership of the residence or qualifying investment at a value not less than the value prescribed by the minister for a minimum of 10 years. They must also file a declaration every 10 years that the information contained in their application on which they relied to obtain the certificate remains unchanged, and where the information has changed, file an affidavit to provide information on the material aspects of that change. Pursuant to the grant of an economic permanent residence certificate, the board may then, or upon subsequent application in the prescribed form, endorse the certificate in respect of the spouse and any dependent ordinarily resident with him. An endorsement may be subject to such conditions as the board may impose, including a condition that the spouse shall not engage in gainful occupation without permission granted under this part. The bill states that notwithstanding the duration of the certificate, any endorsement in favor of a dependent shall be valid until he or she ceases to be a dependent. The death of the holder of an economic permanent residence certificate shall not affect the validity of an endorsement made under subsection 3, subject to the determination of an application for legal status by surviving spouse and the dependent within 3 months of his death. An application shall be deemed to be approved 3 months after receipt of complete application under this section. So a couple of things. That's good. They're building in an approval process, which I think is a good thing because it gives confidence that the process won't be overly delayed, but it's going to also require that the Immigration Board and the Immigration Department are on top of their game in terms of vetting anybody who applies and making sure that it's a real tangible thing. So what you want is skin in the game, all right? The Bahamas has enough capacity to accommodate many thousands of people, as we have seen with the Shantytowns, from outside of the country. We have the capacity to do so, but we want you to do it the proper way. We want you to do it where you come and actually invest money in the country, where you actually buy property in the country, where you have a stake in the game. All right? This is a good thing. This could realize an increase in our revenue. And I think that this is the direction that they should look at very seriously in conjunction with the Ministry of Financial Services. Luckily, as it stands, or until, government changes or whatever, the Minister of Immigration is also the Minister of Financial Services. So what you can get is a thrust to you go market the Bahamas as a value proposition for people to come and live and work and play. All right? Foreigners come. They ain't got to bother nobody. They ain't got to... Someone's saying the broadcast audio's low. Is that something you can do? You figured that out? Okay. So you can come. It ain't no problem, right? Your kids can come, go to school. That ain't no problem. You're all legit. It's on the up and up. You're going to stimulate the local economy, right? You're going to spend with the power company. You're going to spend with the water company. You're going to hire some local services to maintain your home, to keep everything going like this. And you have an investment. Now, the key is going to be, at what level are you going to set that investment to where it's actually a meaningful, tangible thing? So for me, I'm going to look at an investment of at least $500,000 for a home and at least $1 million for a business that's a going concern. All right? So $500,000 for a home, $1 million for a business that is viable, that is domiciled here, that is actually doing business in the Bahamas, even if it is a business that has international clients. All right? So we want you to make sure you have, even if you have a home-based office, even have your, if you got a little office space or something like this, at $1 million investment, we want to see that you actually do have some real skin in the game and to make sure that you're going to maintain this business. Now, I'm not going to lie to you. Me, if you invest in $1 million, I ain't running behind you. And I could see $1 million hit the local bank account and you could show me your business plan, what you plan on doing, all this, and you got your business license and all this stuff like that together. I ain't going to run on too tough with you, right? So I'm happy you invested $1 million. For me, that's enough. Permanent residence, that's fine. You know what I mean? And you want your kids and your wife to come, that's fine. No problem. So think about this. If you had the Ministry of Financial Services out here really marketing this and the Bahamas Financial Services Board, et cetera, because that's the clientele I'm going to go after, all right, of what exists out there. That's the first thing that comes to mind. Someone who can deal with, who can transfer their business here, even though they deal with international clientele. All right. So if you have them out there actively marketing this and actively making this a value proposition for coming to the Bahamas, $500,000, and I'm here to tell you, that's not a lot of money. All right? $500,000. Not for a home in the Bahamas. My kids were, they saw a house the other day in Blair, and they were like, oh, we want to live there. I was like, all right. So I took the number down off the real estate thing, you know, and I was like, I'll call them. We probably ain't moving, but, you know, maybe they're talking about something. And this house in Blair, it wasn't no mansion, just a house, is going for $650,000. Now, I know they don't think anyone normal is going to buy that, right? So they're probably holding out for like a bank or someone or an international organization to go, yeah, we'll buy the house. We can set up clients there. We can offer it as an incentive. Come to the Bahamas. We got a place to stay. If we bring executives in, we can stay there. That sort of thing. And then they do that a lot. But that's not a normal thing. But you can easily spend $500,000 on a house, particularly in Nassau. If you say want to move to Eleuthera, then that much the better. You can build you something solid. All right? You'll build something more solid in better economic times when construction supply chains aren't so hampered, but you can build you something solid for $500,000. The $1 million investment that you here are going to oversee and that you work at is even better. Because if you invest $1 million here, a million is just my arbitrary number, but I couldn't imagine it'd be much less than that, but maybe $750,000, you know? If you invest $1 million here, then you're going to want a place to live. You're asking for permanent residency, so you're going to be here at least 90 days out of the year. You travel. 90 days seems tight, but in the States, I believe it's 6 months. But fine. Ours is 3 months. You're going to rent a place here, right? You're permanent residence. You're moving here. You're going to send your kids to school here if you got kids or whatever like that. You got your dependent here. Your wife, she's going to be here. If you're one of these high net worth people, you're probably going to want all the nice amenities, right? All the spa treatments, the golf club membership, et cetera. So you're going to be spending money in the local economy, stimulating it. And I have no problem with this, and I think this is a good idea, and I think if you market this correctly, you can realize a lot of cash from it. If you could get, if you set the threshold at $1 million and you target 250 millionaires from around the world, of which there are thousands of billionaires, let alone millionaires, you can realize, really, if you target 250 a year, if you just have someone look into it, you have three, four people in financial services who are dedicated to tracking these people down and going around the world, and you ain't got to have the minister, but sometimes that lends some clout. Just dedicated to say, I want 250 people a year. Even if you get 100 people a year with $1 million investment, you're injecting $100 million into the economy a year, right? If they're the $1 million investors, if they're the $500,000, then that's $50 million directly injected into the economy per year. And that's the kind of revenue generation that we need. So this is a good thing. And this is one of the things that I like about this budget. Not that I feel any need to justify what I like or don't like, but it is one of the things that I find could work well if they're intentional about it, much more so than the commercial enterprise thing that hasn't panned out, much more so than the Grand Bahama Tech Hub thing that hasn't panned out. I think this has a real shot of working, all right, if you do it properly. And they got to do it properly, and they got to do it soon. And you got to market it, all right? And I'd present it at every opportunity. Every investor who comes, who wants to submit something to the Bahamas Investment Authority or the National Economic Council, I'm going to ask them if they've been thoroughly briefed on this new economic permanent residence that we have. In fact, I don't have a problem, and I'm going to be, you may not agree with me, but I don't have a problem doing economic citizenship. All right? I don't have a problem with that. If you're invested in the country, then no issue from me. All right? You'll never hear me complain if you're actually invested in the growth and development of this country. All right? Now, we'll do a couple text messages, then we go to a break. It says, Juan, our society has become so dumbed down, that kind of stuff is what people like. Oh, you mean spreading malicious untruths about everybody? Well, I mean, you might, people like it, but you go find yourself in court. People like do a lot of stuff. People like send out nude photos of people as a criminal offense. People do a lot of stuff when they're in their feelings too, right? Speech ain't free. You think that, but it ain't like that. All right? Don't keep fooling yourself. You could call this one a thief and this one crooked and this one corrupt and this one. Don't think that that's going to work. All right? And the politicians in particular are getting hip to it, and the general public will soon as well. Good afternoon, McCartney, now that the budget has been read, do you think the Minister of National Security will call in a reserve entry of the RBDF? I applied a year ago, and I'm still waiting for a response or a call to test. I know the country needs more officers. There's money in there for hiring. There's additional money in there for Defense Force hires. It says, hi, Juan, what's the level of investment? I hope it's over $1 million. Yeah, me too. I would say it needs to be over $1 million. Easily. It says, Juan, I love and endorse everything you said. My only problem is the automatic thing. If they don't hear back from government, government is known for not following up. It says, police are on Nassau Street. Something big's going down. All right, we're going to check it out. Thank you for that. Let's take the break, and we'll be back. We'll talk more about these things. Plus, we'll go through some of the budget areas and see where we're at. And you can call me, too, and weigh in on this. So let's take that break, and we'll be right back.
In life, there are always challenges. Today, we find ourselves having to be more self-sufficient, socially aware, and technically savvy. At J.S. Johnson, we are committed to our customers by providing cost-effective insurance solutions. No matter what your insurance needs, we will always be here for you. Call 397-2100 or visit jsjohnson.com. J.S. Johnson Insurance Agents and Brokers, giving you peace of mind.
Everyone should experience a brand new car, but not everyone can afford one. Until now, Bahamas Bus and Truck has the answer. The stylish, spacious, feature-rich, yet affordable Mitsubishi Attrage. Priced at $21,900, including a 3-year warranty, why not come and experience the value that Mitsubishi has built into the Attrage today? Bahamas Bus and Truck, the country's only authorized Mitsubishi dealer. Telephone 322-1722.
Hello, sir. Your credit card bill is due. Hello, sir. It's time for your monthly loan payment. Tired of creditors pounding at your door? Sign up for a debt consolidation loan from Fidelity Bank and consolidate your debt into one low monthly payment. What's more, you'll also earn interest on a built-in savings account. The pandemic has curbed many freedoms, but at Fidelity, our focus is to help regain your financial freedom. Visit a branch or speak to Fidelity Bank at 356-7764. COVID safety measures in place at all branches. Fidelity, we're good for you.
The sport of sailing has been a part of these islands from the very beginning. From the first settlers to the Cayenne Indians to Columbus to the colonizers to the African slaves that came here, sailing has been in our DNA. Our first taste of Olympic glory came from sailing, and the culture of regattas have been a big part of being Bahamian. The Ministry of Agriculture and Marine Resources presents a 5-part series, The Story of Sailing. 8 p.m. Thursdays on the ZNS Network.
Tired of banks forcing you to use technology to bank the way they want you to? Your convenience is important. So no matter what your banking needs, Commonwealth Bank's friendly staff are always available in branch for that personal one-on-one service. But when you choose technology, our online and mobile banking app offers you state-of-the-art functionality. The choice is yours. Commonwealth Bank. Bank the way you want.
Back for a limited time
at Popeyes.
Come in and get your ripping chicken today. Enjoy an all-white meat chicken breast partially cut into pull-apart strips, which are slow marinated in a blend of Louisiana seasoning, then hand-battered into a crispy southern breading and deep-fried. Rip this special out of any Popeyes today, along with two signature sides, a biscuit and sauce for just $7.50 VAT inclusive.
Love that chicken from Popeyes.
This is Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back to The Revolution here on Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. My name is Juan McCartney. So good to have you with us. All right. So we're talking about the economic permanent residence thing, and we're going to look at now some numbers, and I'll get your feedback too. You can call me. 323-6232. 325-4316. 325-4259. Or you can text at 422-4796. But okay, so the government is putting this to the Bahamian people in the budget as something that is going to realize revenue. All right? Now, it's not specifically saying economic permanent residence, but here's what the immigration revenue forecasts are. So, on immigration fees, we see that for this fiscal year, they're projected to come in at $51,100,000. Now, I look at that and I'm not sure that I believe that for this fiscal year in terms of if you only collected $20 million up to the July through March area, I don't know what accounts for you thinking that there's another $30 million that's outstanding unless you have information that you've processed X amount of immigration applications or whatever it is, and gone from there. Now, that could also be you're looking at tourist revenue as well. All right. Now, they project that it's going to go from 51 million this year to 66 million the year after, 68.7 million the year after that, and 73.72 million. So they're looking at something, at immigration fees to rise dramatically. All right? The question you ask yourself through all this, is this realizable? This is all contingent on all this going exactly according to plan. When they're looking at work and resident permit fees, which is where I believe this money is to be put, they're looking at going from 7.5 million. Oh, I see what they did here. They moved the work and resident permit fees. They look like they transferred some of that to reclassify as immigration fees. Okay, I see. That's okay, because at their year-end projection, they removed about 27 million, and then I guess they'd put the other 27 million on top of there, and they look at whatever is coming in. Okay, I see. It's an accounting issue. That's fine. Anyway, so they're going from 7.5 million in work and resident permit fees. Keep in mind, we collected 9 million in 2019-2020. 7.5 million in work and resident permit fees this year. It's a projection because the year still isn't over yet. To 17,876,000 in fees next year, 20 million the year after that, and 22 million the year after that. So we're going from 7.5 to 17 million. That's an increase of $10 million. So what we're saying is we believe that work and resident permit fees are going to rise dramatically to the tune of $10 million. Now, can they do that? How do they plan on doing that? All right. Let's go to a phone line. Good afternoon. Welcome to the revolution. No? Not there? All right. You can call back. 323-6232. 325-4316. 325-4259. All right. So we're going from 7.5 million to 17.8 million. To 20.1 million, to 22 million, all right? We're predicting dramatic growth. We're predicting that we will triple what we are taking in work permit and residence fees by 2023-24. Now, the issue with all of this, again, is you have to ask yourself, is this achievable, and what makes us think that? So we would expect Ellsworth Johnson, after he attacks Philip Brave Davis in the House of Assembly, and after he praises Minnis, and after he finishes talking about growing up on Cat Island, we would expect him to explain this. All right? Yes, we can look at your expenditure, and we expect you to explain that too, but we want to understand what makes you believe you're going to realize this revenue proposition. All right? Because you're saying immigration fees are going to skyrocket. I don't know if you think that's just because of the tourism thing. Again, we asked, why do you think that's going to happen when we're looking at real 60 to 70% maybe tourism uptick? But you're projecting dramatic increases in the work permit and residence fees. It'd be nice if you could striate that so we could see which is which. But what makes you believe that that's going to happen? Because we're not going to issue how many work permits? $2,000. In order to realize $10 million, you have to do 5,000 work permits. Would that do it? Yeah, you'd have to issue 5,000 more work permits. So we know that's not going to happen. So you're looking probably at permanent residence fees, and we want to know what that is. So to me, if it's a hefty fee and they have to have an investment, that's fine with me too. If it's a hefty fee and have to go ahead and purchase a home, that's fine with me too. It says, Juan, I hope we can have some serious nuanced dialogue on the subject. I'm not an anti-immigrant, and I know we are underpopulated, but I want migrants and those who try to demonize people who speak against undocumented persons to understand that the Bahamas has the right to control migration and choose, vet those we allow in our borders. Of course. Of course. That's what the Immigration Department is for. All right? That's what the Immigration Board is for. Man one, now I see why Mutri carrying on the way he carrying on. The man wants to run. You just see that? You didn't? That wasn't crystal clear to you before? Says, this the same man who said his constituent said on the news that she went to him for food during the pandemic. The man gave her seeds to plant. One, he's in for a good cut skin. LOL. He got problems. He got the guy, Jamal Strawn. He's a new face for the PLP is running against him. And he's also got Nicole Martin, former union leader. She's running for the FNM. Boy, I don't think Mutri's got a shot. I know you don't want to hear that, but I don't think he has a shot. Juan, this is a good idea. If we had the infrastructure to support a good quality of life for these persons and Bahamians, we lack affordable and reliable electricity. We lack telecommunications penetration, and we lack efficient and affordable transportation. Crime is out of control, and we don't have good nightlife options, so I don't see this yielding the perceived benefits. Now, what you say is true in a broad sense, but the Bahamas does have ultra-luxurious communities where people live unbothered by the concerns that we have. All right? These are communities, people, lights go out, they got generator. All right? Perfectly manicured communities, communities with every amenity that they could ask for. So you have people who are living in the Bahamas their best life and would rather be nowhere else, while we have a lot of other people who are living in constant pressure. This is one, this doesn't apply to the Haitians and their descendants. They just come to take our land. When we ask them to move, they say they're poor. Then they take us to court and complain about us to the UN. So explain to me again the economic value of poor Haitians swamping us besides repatriating monies to Haiti. Well, we're not talking about that today, but I'll say this. The number of millionaires in Haiti, just by virtue of the sheer population numbers, dwarfs the number of millionaires who are Bahamian. All right? So if we can go recruit some Haitian millionaires to come here and they want economic citizenship, please come. Right? If you're a millionaire, you're wealthy, what's the problem? Is it that you're Haitian? I don't care. I don't care if you're Haitian, you're Japanese, Jamaican, doesn't matter. Right? If you're coming and you have a vested interest in the Bahamas and you're building it, not to say that the illegal migrants haven't helped build the Bahamas, but if you're coming here legally and you're building the Bahamas, then that's fine. In fact, if you are a skilled laborer and you are Haitian and you have something to contribute and you want to work in the Bahamas, there's a process. You can apply for a permit, and I don't have a problem with you coming like that. You come the wrong way, that presents a problem. All right, let's go to a break, and then we will be back. They keep saying my mic's low. I don't know. I hear some people hear me. Some people, I don't know if it's a particular medium where the mic's low or if it's just me and that something happened in the studio. Anyway, let's take the break for news and we'll be right back.
This is Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, quality. We'll be right back.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back to The Revolution here on Guardian Radio. We were talking the economic citizenship thrust by the government. We weren't able to get into any other real revenue thrust for the government, so we're going to talk about that for a few minutes, and then we're going to be speaking with some labor leaders about the labor movement in the Bahamas, because Friday is Labor Day. Ain't going to be no parade this lap, I guess. We'll see. But we're definitely going to be talking about that as well. But you can weigh in if you want to. Give me a call, and we'll discuss it, or you can text. And the concept of economic citizenship. Okay, let me see. This one says, Haiti has more millionaires than our entire population. No. Okay, so I know that I don't know why you would say that. But no. So if Haiti's got 11 million people. If Haiti has as many millionaires as our entire population, that would mean 3% of the population of Haiti are millionaires. So 3 in every 100 people in Haiti is a millionaire. That's ludicrous. Do you see how that sounds? In fact, per capita, the Bahamas has like something like 0.3 or 0.4% millionaires, and that's higher than Haiti per capita. So no, Haiti doesn't have. It has maybe several thousand, probably a couple thousand millionaires, and it's got at least one billionaire. Well, two, but what's it? Gilbert Biggio is a Haitian billionaire. He's supposed to be the richest man in Haiti, although many people had said Jean-Bertrand Aristide was the richest man in Haiti unofficially, but that's a different story. All right. Good afternoon. Welcome to The Revolution. Hello. Good afternoon. No, is that person not there? No. Nope. Good afternoon. Welcome.
Good afternoon, Juan.
Hey, how's it going? Yeah, hi. Okay. We are not going to deal with that. So we'll go through this, and then we'll... be talking with our labor leaders. Hi, Juan. My concern is the same as the previous texter, who's been included in the budget to attract people to invest in business. What has been included in the budget to attract people to invest in business and buy homes in the Bahamas? The Family Islands lack infrastructure, and the vast majority of New Providence is dirty, rundown, and crime-ridden. The eastern end of Bay Street looks like the Gaza Strip. Electricity and internet are iffy for doing business and dealing with commercial banks and government agencies. Makes you want to slit your wrists. So unless we make some investments in our people and infrastructure, I doubt we will see any real uptick in revenue from this initiative. All right, so again, they're telling me the volume's low. I don't know what's going on. But is it this mic or... Anyway. Can I try this mic? Is that better? No? Does it matter? I'll put both. Two mics. Now, indeed, there are places in New Providence that are run down and people don't want to live, but there are places in New Providence, in Paradise Island and other islands, that are very, very, very nice that many, many rich people already seek to live in. Hey, Juan, what Mutri is saying about MyCal and more seats doesn't make sense. Government fine investments, not MPs. It seems he will say and do anything to get elected. Yeah, I don't think he's making sense either. But that's just me. All right? It says, when you say economic citizenship, is that for the life of their investment? Can you clear it up for me, please? Thanks much. Well, it's economic permanent residency, which the government is talking about. I'm saying I don't have a problem with economic citizenship. So every 10 years, you need to come in and show them that your investment is still viable. If it's not viable, explain to them why not. So, okay, I invested $1 million. I ran my business for 10 years. We closed the business. Or I ran my business. I retired now. I'm living here. I'm a permanent resident still. So every 10 years, you're supposed to check in. I don't know. Some people are saying volume's low. Some people are saying that's fine. I don't know. It says, fees from work permits on the increase is highly achievable, but it's also a cost of Bahamian jobs. If you look at it now, residents in Albany, Old Fort Bay, and Lifeway areas are no longer hiring Bahamians as maids and handymen, and are hiring Filipinos at an alarming rate and really don't care about the rise in fees because they can afford it. In the next 5 years, there won't be one black Bahamian in any of those homes. I can guarantee it. That may be possibly true, and I've heard that complaint. It's a challenging situation. This says, we got callers. All right. We'll do this, and in a few minutes, we'll take a break, and we'll talk to our union leaders. Good afternoon. Welcome to The Revolution. Hello, good afternoon. I can't hear anyone. Good. Hello, good afternoon.
Hello.
Yes, hello. Can you hear me? Hello. You got to do something with the mic, Ollie. It's killing me here. Good afternoon. Can you hear me? Well, I'm trying. It's not working. All right, let's try another one. Is the mic low on the board, or call Wally? Ask him to take a look at it. Good afternoon. Welcome to the revolution. Hello, good afternoon. One more time. All right, we're not getting the calls. It's not working. I don't know why. It's just me. Everything decides to freak out when I come. All right. Let's quickly go to a break, see if we can get the volume issue dealt with, because I don't want my guests to not be able to be heard too. And then let's speak with our union leaders, and we can still field a couple of questions you may have about this economic citizenship or comments. All right? Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
$5 can get you delicious combos fit for a king? Well, it can, but only at Burger King Nassau. Not only is the big in-flavor flame-grilled Whopper Jr. combo you love available for just $5, but now you can enjoy a crispy chicken junior sandwich topped with bacon plus fries and a drink for only $5 as well. At Burger King Nassau, you get to choose between a chicken BLT or flame-grilled beef in two great combos that include fries and a drink for only $5, including VAT. Value has a new home at Burger King Nassau, where taste is king.
At Bahamas Bus and Truck Company Limited, we provide vehicles known for quality and durability. From the iconic Jeep Wrangler to the award-winning Grand Cherokee, we've got your everyday driver covered. For larger tasks, our Ram 1500, Mitsubishi Fuso Canter Trucks, CMC Verica Vans, and Fuso Rosa Jitneys do way more than just deliver. We even carry a wide variety of pre-owned vehicles. To keep you going, our parts, service department, and body shop can accommodate our brands and others. Call us today at 322-1722 or email info@bahamasbus.com.
At Ron's Electric Motors, they repair and rewind all major brands of electric motors, including water pumps, generators and generators back end, welding machines, electric lifts, air compressors, battery chargers, and more. They're equipped to handle up to 850 kilowatts and rewind up to 450 horsepower motors. They're conveniently located on the corner of Wolf and Clarence Roads and are open weekdays 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. Saturdays till noon. They offer 24 hours emergency assistance. You can reach them at 242-356-0249.
Preparing for a hurricane can make all the difference in safeguarding the lives of family, friends, and neighbors. By knowing what action you should take, you can reduce the effects of a hurricane disaster. Get all the facts of the potential of having insurance, impact-resistant windows, home emergency power, essential supplies, and a lot more before the storm. After the storm, where to purchase building or cleaning supplies, waste disposal, medical care, and more. The Nassau Guardians Hurricane Guide will help you make sure everyone knows what to do in the event a hurricane approaches. Take advantage of this double insertion opportunity plus 15 commercials on Star 106 hits. Contact us today at 302-2300. That's 302-2300 or your account executive. Will you be prepared?
The sport of sailing has been a part of these islands from the very beginning. From the first settlers to the Cayenne Indians to Columbus to the colonizers to the African slaves that came here, sailing has been in our DNA. Our first taste of Olympic glory came from sailing, and the culture of regattas have been a big part of being Bahamian. The Ministry of Agriculture and Marine Resources presents a five-part series, The Story of Sailing, 8 p.m. Thursdays on the ZNS Network.
This is Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
Good afternoon, Mamas. Welcome back to The Revolution here on Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM. My name is Juan McCartney. I'm hoping you can hear me properly now. I do have my guest in studio with me, Mr. Dave Beckford, who's the Vice President of the General Workers Union, as well as Bernard Evans, who is the current president of the NCTUB. He tells me he's not running again. That's what he say now. So we'll see. All right, so, but we got to test out. They made some changes to the board, apparently, so that's what's happening with the volume. Let's try take a phone call just to see if we're percolating, and then you can call in as well and speak to Mr. Evans and Mr. Beckford. Good afternoon. Welcome to The Revolution.
Mr. McCartney, how are you doing, sir?
Hey, Dave, what's happening?
Mr. Beckford, how are you doing? Mr. Evans, how are you doing?
Wonderful, okay. Sir. Wonderful.
Mr. McCartney, a few quick points I'll make. Well, one question, right? Mr. McCartney, who have more say? The Director of Labor or the Minister of Labor or the Minister of Tourism? I mean, first of all, I work in a hotel my whole life. Now, back in the days, if a company made you redundant, right?
Mm-hmm.
They supposed to they put the pay in full, right?
Yes.
I mean, it's more in the world, the niece of the Agla coming on national television, boasting and bragging, or Atlanta's trying to pay these workers in installments. I mean, what's this?
Yeah, I don't get that one either. Yeah.
Pardon me?
I say I don't get that one.
And then the next thing too, do you realize right now? No, I forgot to use the mind been wrong. Do you think this country needs 20 justices of the Supreme Court? You think so?
20 justices? Depends. You know what I mean? I think there is a significant backlog, and if that could help clear it up, then I don't have a problem with it.
Another thing, right? Seniority. I mean, like I said, I congratulate all judges who get picked, because they pick yourself, okay? But the bottom line, on the world, you have people who are appointed to the bench who never sit in a criminal court or civil court. You got a full set?
Yeah. Again, you can... It could be a challenge for someone, but they could...
And
get up to speed.
Last but least, I mean, now, this year, Frankie Campbell, and he became himself. Now, Mr. Gartney, where in the day in the Bahamas when a regular citizen cannot question a cabinet minister? Do you realize Frankie Campbell and FN ministers now, they're resorting to putting people before a court with strong arm tactics and intimidation? But,
man, you can be talking about you get your sweetheart daughter pregnant on no voice note and let that ride.
Mr.
That
Mr.
ain't fitting proper. You need
Mr.
to go before the court.
Mr. Gartney,
watch your mouth with people name out here, man. You don't get to mind my reputation just because I run for office.
Michelle, so, Mr. Gartney.
Hey.
Last thing. So when you go to Sun Shores and people ask him, what do you do? Question, I look about them? Tell them.
But they only asking him because you put out this false allegation or whatever it is to damage the man's reputation? What that got to do with it?
No, what happened?
No, we in total disagreement. Y'all need to do better.
No, Mr. Gartney, anyhow.
Be careful with people's names, because you wouldn't want it done to you.
Okay?
All right.
Reckon coming, okay? For everybody, okay?
That's fine.
All right,
Joe. All right. Yeah. In no circumstance you can have me think that's okay. That's you say it. You must know what you was going to do after you said it. All right? Okay, so I'm glad I have you guys here, too. And this isn't a pile up and gang on any particular party, or business. But I find the Atlantis thing very strange, all right? And I know that they could kind of do what they want to do with the emergency order being the way it is at the moment, but I feel as though if you're going to sever employees, you should pay them one shot and give them all their money and let them have a clean break as opposed to waiting 3 months. Even though, yeah, you're going to get the money, I guess you could wait. I think that it doesn't make sense. And what I understand is that Atlantis is cash trap because of being closed for a while, and clearly Atlantis's parent company Brookfield is trying to offload the company, and I don't know the inner workings of that particular relationship, but there's no circumstance under which you were telling me that Brookfield couldn't advance Atlantis $20 million to sever these employees, and they couldn't have worked out an arrangement to pay that back. So Brookfield manipulated the debt that Sol Kerzner incurred in order to seize control of the company away from him, then if you're doing that, you must be able to take care of this company. Or else why did you take it on in the first place? Just to flip it and sell it? It doesn't make sense. And while you have it, it's yours. You have to take care of it. So I don't agree with how this is being done. I like Atlantis. I like the people, but I don't agree with this one.
Well, actually, let me just weigh in on that. I just spoke with the president of the hotel union.
I can't hear him well. Speak for me. Go ahead.
Check.
Okay, go ahead.
You good?
Yeah.
I just spoke with Darren Woods a minute ago, but there's no doubt that the hotel is in error and they violated the law. Once you separate somebody, the law dictates that you must promptly give them their checks. At the same time, you let them go. If Atlantis, say, only had a certain amount of money, let's say they had $100,000, then what they should have done was satisfy what $100,000
could
have
done
to separate and leave the other persons on under the condition that they were still employed. And as their time continues to roll on, their added incentives, added additions could have been piling up as well. So when their time come to be separated, they would not be gypped. And so this is a clear violation of the law. And this is a country of laws. And so they shouldn't be allowed to get away with it. Now, mind you, not every employee is complaining, you know, but the vast majority, understanding that they have been furloughed for almost a year or a little over a year, they should have been given their checks promptly as the law dictates. And so there's no getting around it. From what I understand, the Minister of Labor also weighed in and said that they are in error, Atlantis that is, and they should have settled with those persons.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, first of all, McCartney, on behalf of the Commonwealth of Bahamas Trade Union Congress and President Mr. Obi Ferguson.
Okay, go ahead. Yeah.
It's really a pleasure to be on your show.
Thanks, man.
And it's nice to be here with Mr. Bernard Evans. Well, for me, the whole Atlanta situation, being a former employee of 26 years, you know, and being a former landscaper, I had concerns with how Atlantis was conducting business in terms of with their workers from this begin. And certainly, again, I was one of those persons agitating and asking to be made redundant because as a landscaper, I couldn't even understand why we were home, such a huge property, and you're talking about maintenance. And the department was already short staff. And so, you know, I asked to be redundant. But I also spoke out against what Atlantis was doing at the time because when they opened up in July, they didn't call any landscapers back. And then the word was, hey, you guys, hotel workers, hang on. Things are going to pick up. Things are going to be okay. But for some reason, I didn't see it. But anyhow, I was let go in December. And now that Atlantis has finally decided to let go 700 after being furloughed, these workers have been furloughed now for over a year, I think it's in bad taste to pay them in installments. And certainly, like Bernard Evans said, the law is clear. You know, these workers should have been paid all of their money. I think it just adds to their stress, their financial stress and the emotional stress that they've been going through, unfortunately, from this pandemic started. So, you know, I think Atlantis could do better because, you know, I think we forget that prior to this pandemic, that there was some business was good, man. The numbers was up. I worked at Lattice, man. Business was good. They've had spent millions on renovations. Unfortunately, no contract was negotiated. So from the time Brooksfield took over, there hasn't been any increase in wages, no back pay, no new benefits. So the notion that they are broke, for me, I find that very hard to believe. I don't understand how they could be broke because business was pretty good. And then you're talking about 700, but there are still more furloughed hotel workers, even if you even after letting go 700. Yeah,
absolutely.
You know what I mean? So, I think that somewhere down the line, I think the government missed the mark on this. When this was finalized and the decision was made, it should have been made with the sense that these workers would be paid all of their money.
Absolutely. All right.
I have spoke to several of them who said that they don't agree with it, and they would like to have all their money as soon as possible.
Right. And they're put in a rough position like this. Now, we got a call about this. Good afternoon. Welcome to the revolution.
Yes. Good afternoon, Juan McCartney, Sheldon Johnson.
Hey, buddy.
Initially called for your immigration issue, but sure. I would like to speak on the Labor Day thing also. On the immigration issue, the investment by, the residency by investment, we must not have a conversation of that without an immigration issue. Because as you begin to talk about the hundreds of people coming into the country complete as families, and it could very easily move to the thousands if digital Bahamas was to ever happen, you also have to consider that those families will most likely also have children birthed into the Bahamas, in the Bahamas, etc. And so the whole immigration as well as this investment thing must be taken in together in context.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But it is a potential to, I could see very easily, companies seeing the Bahamas attractive with the proper marketing that could easily drop $1 billion or more per year into the Bahamian economy just from the digital aspect, because they will have to build some infrastructure to support what they're coming for.
Right, absolutely.
Now, on the immigration, I mean, on the labor issue, the world has changed, and we have somehow seemed to be married to the old concepts of what labor used to be. I see no upskilling and no changing for the new economic models that we have. And so I would love for those labor union leaders, as they move into this Labor Day, to come out with a new charge, that they will become actively involved and not become like sluts and endangered species, that and help redefine the economic and labor in the Bahamas, considering that, you know, maybe 50% of the jobs we lost will not be coming back. But we have a potential for, we have the potential for a net gain in jobs if we actually look at the new economic models, where the workers have to be representatives in those new models, so they could also direct the upskilling or new skilling that is necessary for people to move in and make sure they're in a position to actually begin to advocate in advance for the benefits that has to be for those individuals in these new type of economy. So hopefully just not more of arguing about what could, should, might, could, maybe be. Let's start talking about building a new Bahamas with workers in charge.
Thanks. Okay. Thank you, sir. So, all right, let's talk about it. So it is the 60th anniversary of the passage of the labor bill.
The bill, yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So you came from far. How far did you come?
Let me tell you how far we came as a people. Really, you know our history. I didn't need to go beyond that, how we were all, whatever it was. But it all began for us in 1942, as you know, when people doing the same work at the new airport,
right.
Yes,
mm-hmm.
Where two people doing the same work, one was paid double than the other for doing the exact same work. And so that prompted the first standing up as a people to say, you know, this injustice must be corrected. But the unification is the key. All right. So when we started, when they started, our forefathers stand in 1942, it prompted the Bremen Road Riot. Blood, death was suffered during that particular time, as you know. Fast forward 12 years later, even though some advancement was made to rectify those injustices, but again, not all was done. This was all done incrementally, as you know. So in 1958, then we had a general strike, where the taxi cabs were being left out. These big omnibuses would show up and grab all of the fares, as opposed to these taxis were allowed to get one or two passengers. And so that prompted yet another change,
yeah.
All right, came out of that. And then we had the father of labor, who was an independent at the time during the elections in 1967, and who casted his lot, as you know, with the Progressive Liberal Party in the bypass. That's all history. But there were so many gains that we have had since then. You can imagine there was a time when there was no vacation, no maternity leave, no paternity leave, no pension, no gratuity, no 40-hour work week, none of this stuff, all right? If it wasn't for organized labor, there would be no National Insurance Board. There would be no National Health Insurance. And so we've come a long way. What has happened, though, we have seen the constant rolling back of these gains.
Yes.
Employers have now invested so much money in legal talents to try to segue and to try to dissect loopholes within the Industrial Relations Act, within these industrial agreements that we have had. Any way form, the Employment Act, any way they can kind of find a loophole to bust the bonds of labor and the advance of labor, they've been doing so. And so this being our 60th anniversary, obviously we call now for a new charge, a new generation of young persons like Beckford and others who are coming up to take the baton to take it to the next level. I agree to the call pretty much, but I don't want people to believe that we have been stagnant and to abrogate. One of the beauties and advances I think we've gotten ever since we began to go to the ILO in person in Geneva, Switzerland every year, which they preach the ILO is all about the tripartite model, where you have labor representatives, government representatives, and you have the employer representatives. And around those framework, you were able to foster legislation to ensure the best for everyone. All administration, Mr. McCartney, political administration, talk about providing better jobs, providing better conditions for the worker. Our Constitution says that every citizen of this country is entitled to decent work, all work. And so even you, as you said, you want decent work, a safe place to work, a place for progression, not to be victimized if you speak out. And so we have had advancements going forward. Unfortunately, there's always a change in the leadership of the movement. And with those changes, unfortunately, comes some kind of weakening, sometimes comes strengthening. And so unless we, one of the biggest blow for me was when there was a split in the trade union movement right. as a whole, the TUC. Once we had the TUC, then you have now the NCTUB. Well, I've been trying now, and unfortunately I'm leaving, but I've been trying to regain that unification again. Yeah. That is when we were strongest. We got all those gains because we were unified. I'm talking about the stuff I mentioned earlier, the pension, the right. gratuity, the vacation, the sick leave, and all that stuff. That happened when we were unified, when we were one. But since then, we disassemble ourselves, and every union is now a silo.
Right.
You know, I'm doing the best for my union because I'm the president. He's doing the best. He's the president. And so you have these personalities that's coming to the flow, mm-hmm. coming to the fore and cause some of our weakness. But last and foremost, I just want people to understand that we have never abrogated our responsibility. Mm-hmm. This position I hold is an innate feeling that I have. And I think he has to do for us to stand up for persons who have been marginalized, who can't mm-hmm. speak for themselves. This is not a paid position for me to come out and do this. Mm-hmm. And so this is someone, when you stand up on the shop floor, you say, you know what, that's not right what you're doing to Vaughn McCartney. You deserve better. And take away the favoritism, the nepotism or whatever's involved, and pay you on your merit. And so that is what union really came out and to protect. And so for a person to believe that unions, the time is coming past, never. Once union dies, all those gains that we have realized, you could forget them. One by one, they will fall like dominoes, yeah. all right? And so a lot of people oftentimes put union aside. But when they wake up, come Labor Day, and they know it's a day off, a paid day off, or that's labor. We get all that stuff.
And we'll go to the phone line, but I think, too, that there's a segment of Bahamians who don't appreciate, who do see unions as having, you know, strong arms from employers, but don't appreciate some of the benefits that we have as a society
right.
that are in law because of unions that yes. a lot of big countries don't have, like exactly. paid maternity leave, yeah. paid mm-hmm. vacations,
paid
and stuff
paternity
like.
Leave is a right. recent paid addition to that, too.
Yes, right. Okay. You have a comment, but you have a comment.
So right. One, like Bernard said, you know, it's the unions that built the middle class, you know, and we've been also advocating and agitating for the increase in minimum wages, better working conditions. But like Bernard said, the employers have been getting ever wiser. And even when it comes to negotiations, when it comes to industrial agreement, you always have to find yourself in court just to get the employers to come to the table. And so it's been a challenge. And the TUC and the NTC, you know, we, like Bernard said, we've been making special efforts so that we could work together in the best interest of the workers.
Excellent.
So, but we are continuing to work hard. We're there because, you know, at the end of the day, sometimes when we really go there and fight hard, then they say we're trying to break up the country. And you know, we hate the employers and all kind of nonsense sometimes. It's not true. But at the end of the day, we are there. Like we did present a workers' agenda to the opposition, and we want to present that to any of the political parties who are vying for leadership of this country, because we say you know, I for you for me. You know, the workers' yes. Voice will not be silenced.
All right, we're going to get to the workers' agenda, but let's take the phone call before we do that. Good afternoon. Welcome to the revolution.
Thank you, Ron. How are you?
I'm fine. How are you?
Good, and good afternoon to you, guys.
Good afternoon,
Tom. Yeah, my observations with the unions over the years, I heard, I think that's Mr. Evans.
Yes, ma'am.
You mentioned something about, in reference to how these companies, how they hire, the, or they have these
lawyers,
legal, that are able to pick through and diminish or demolish your contract or whatever have you. Right? My thing is, well, how is it? We have had the unions into place for many years, and there were struggles. There were many struggles and pain, okay? So, don't you think that, especially this hotel union, don't you think that the unionists, the leaders of these unions, should have been ahead of the game in order to preempt? Like how you have some, like, say, major hotels or whatever, they have a whole legal department and human resources. So this is what they do. They are hired to do these things, to go into those contracts, read through those, comb through those contracts. Here you have union leaders who are part of negotiating these contracts. Mm. You understand? So I don't know about going forward, but what I see on the horizon, unless the new generation of leaders in unionists or whatever you want to call it, labor or whatever, are willing to really educate themselves and have themselves in place to be a part. Then you send someone to go and negotiate for work, or let's just say, I'll go back to hotel again. Even banking, right? They're going to send their lawyer to sit down and meet with you. You're going to just send a shop steward or whatever. These people, when you start throwing these things at them, they are completely lost, and the worker who is paying their $10 every week ends up losing, and then another thing too. Why, I don't know, understand why, for all over the time, the stronger these unions have become, this is when the political carrot gets dangled before their eyes, and then they go and they step off, and they don't look back at you guys. So I think going forward, for persons who are looking, who are in the work field about to enter, you have to be ahead of the game, just like these companies. Thank you.
Okay. I'm going to let you respond to that, but I'm going to say I don't know how you get ahead of the game if the government allows the employer to do whatever it wants.
Thank you very much. Often, that number one, madam, and I thank you for your call. Listen, normally industrial agreements are designed so that any regular layperson could understand it. And that is why the highest court, not only the highest court, but the highest court as it relates to labor disputes is in the tribunal. And the tribunal allow for any regular worker to go and represent themselves and to lay before the judge where they believe that they have been wronged or they have been taken advantage of. And so it doesn't really call for a lawyer per se to go. But listen, I could vouch that our labor leaders who negotiate industrial agreements, they're by far enough to sit down and meet out industrial agreements. The issue is not that the lawyers are sharper than us and they're able to find whatever loopholes. I give you a clear, this is a clear example right now. The hotel right now is violating and not only the industrial agreement, they are violating the law of the land.
Mm-hmm.
The minister has told them that they are wrong.
Wrong.
But who's going to bring them to bear and the consequences of their mm-hmm. wrong? That is the issue. When you have a major employer who hire a lot of persons or whatever it is, and they're able to say to government, but you know what, I can't afford this. I might as well shut down.
Hmm.
So the government now in the quagmire, they say, you know what, well, let's just see if we could meet halfway. And so they allow, in many, many cases, to violate the law. And so it's not so much the unions that we are behind the game, but oftentimes we are just find ourselves against two formidable forces. That's the government themselves and the employer. And that's the difficulty with us getting ahead. But I agree with you on some of the matters that you've said, Mom. I agree.
Now, I want to be fair to Atlantis. You're saying they're violating outside of the law, but in reality, they are going by what the emergency order says they can do because the government has suspended that part of the law must follow.
But I'm hearing you, but again, I want to err on the side of what the minister said. He said that they are violating the law.
I think they're definitely wrong.
Thing is, right, the minister will admit, the director will admit that they are violating the law. Okay, they are, so what? What next?
Right.
The workers are still leaving, holding the bag.
Yeah. And you're responsible for the law, so.
I said from the break that I think the...
That's it? You just dropped your hand?
I said from the break that, in my view, the emergency orders more favor the employer.
Yeah.
Because the employer have the option
definitely
to,
does.
You know, furlough you, call you back to work, send you home, in the case with Malia, close down.
Right.
But the workers left. At their mercy.
And I thought they could have structured, if you must do the emergency order, you could at least structure it in a way that allows for bargaining units.
I mean, you can tell me the government couldn't say something to Atlantis to say, hey, man, this is going on too long. You guys need... Okay, Bama did redundancy exercise, right?
Right.
Hilton did it. Malia did it prior to them closing. I think Lightfoot Key is closed down. So I always had a question mark. You know, what's going on at Lattice, you know? they seem to be getting special privileges.
Yeah.
In my view.
But look at the reality. Even if Mr. Woods and his team want to go to court, by the time the court come up, it's going to be 3, 4, 5 months.
Yeah.
And the people say, you know, we could have gotten paid.
Right. We got the money already.
So, yes.
Right.
But then one, like you say, too, the emergency order suspends the whole law.
Yeah.
Even your time doesn't count while you're furloughed.
Yeah. So you're really at the mercy of the employer.
But to be truthful and honest also, union leaders has to be responsible also. Because I know there's an injunction in place stopping the executives of those who are union from coming on the property. I think that has been in place too long. And unfortunately, there's no agreement, no new registered industrial agreement between the Lattice and Hotel. And I think Mr. Wood have said he would have submitted a proposal, et cetera. But again, we all have to be responsible from the government and the union, in all fairness to the ladies.
Yeah. Comment. Let's go to a phone call. Good afternoon. Welcome to the revolution.
Yeah, good afternoon. How are you doing?
Hey, what's happening, buddy?
I'm good. Good afternoon, Mr. Evans and Mr. Beckford. How are you all gentlemen doing?
Good afternoon. Great. Wonderful.
Excellent. Always a pleasure to hear you all, knowing that you all are bringing the fight on behalf of the human people. It's really sad in this country where we have a government that has no respect for labor laws in the country. And a government that has no respect for union leaders, nor the workers in the country. It's counterproductive to ease of business. It's counterproductive to easing the hardships that Bahamians are experiencing. And if we just take a quick glance over at what is happening in the great United States of America, there is a president, Joe Biden. He is heavily promoting the labor union movement in the United States, because he recognized the importance of the labor union movement to ensuring that blue collar workers get their fair share of the pie. And so you have in Philip Ray Davis a similar kind of thinking. But to get to my point, you were telling Beckford just now that the emergency orders permit for what the hotels are seeking to do, but it does not. The emergency orders permit for the hotel employers to furlough staff. But once they make the determination in and of themselves that they're going to move staff from furlough position to redundancy position, then the traditional and regular labor laws kick in full effect. And that's what Atlantis has moved from the covering that the government gave them, unbeknownst to hotel employees and unbeknownst to the hotel labor union leaders, where they negotiated that they could suspend rights of or labor rights of workers. They moved from that covering, from the furlough, to redundancy. And so they have no more covering or no more protection underneath the emergency orders. But the primary point I'll end on this point right here, one, that I called you for is, about 2 weeks ago, I tried to explain to you on your show that the labor law dictates that once any hotel in this country decides they're going to lay off a certain amount of staff, a threshold of 20 or more, as a matter of fact, that they are required by law to notify the minister minimum of 2 weeks in advance, just not
days.
When they're going to do it, you know, just of their
it's
of
30 days, according to Evan, but you were saying 3 months, and that presented.
No. I said that they have a responsibility to report to the to the minister, as well as they have a responsibility to inform the labor union leaders, which they did not do in advance. And I explained to you that just as we were speaking, about 2 minutes before I got to that point, you are on your news break. And the Minister of Labor stated during that news break that he was just informed one day before, that Atlantis was going to make 10% of its staff redundant. And that's why I hopped on that point, to explain to you that they did not give any notice. And in lieu of them not giving notice, as per the law, then the penalty is that they are to pay each staff at their basic rate of pay by 30 days. And so I was stating that the minister is very incompetent, because he has not spoken to this fact, and he is allowing for Atlantis to willy-nilly break our laws in our country. And I was demanding that the minister get on page and ensure that the workers are protected, as well as the hoteliers or the hotel bosses are protected. as it relates to adhering to the laws of the Bahamas. And you went on and you ran on this raid saying, oh, no, Antoine, I don't think you know what he's talking about. But you started to read the labor law. But when you recognized what I was saying was true, you didn't read it out completely. So I just wanted to highlight that point. I was waiting for 2 weeks for you to discuss this point just so that I could add that particular point. Thank you.
I don't think you were right in what you were saying, though, still, Anton, so we disagree.
You have two labor union leaders right in the office with you who can correct you. You can look to Article 26A of the labor law of the Employment Act for your own correction. Thank you very much.
Anton, you're correct in what the law dictates. The minister must be notified 30 mm-hmm. days in advance.
Yep.
Failure to do so would result in exactly what you said. They'd be paid an additional 30 days. Mike contacted the minister. He told me that, no, they had communicated to him prior to the 30 days that they were going to let go 10% of the staff. And so the 30 days penalty falls away. And that was his words to me. It would be difficult to tell the minister, well, no, based on what you said, that you just heard about it. But he told me straight up, because I brought that issue to him. He said, no, they had discussion with me prior to 30 days, so that doesn't hold any water.
But not what he said.
That's what he told
me. But I don't remember Anton saying all that.
Yeah, that's what he told
but me. I concede that they didn't give proper notice according to what the minister said that day.
And lastly, I want people to know, too, that in the competent authority and whatever dictates that he has in there to allow the hotel to do certain things, mm-hmm. we also I asked the Prime Minister for also a commensurate slide too and the cessation of the labor laws so that they could kind of co-insist and go along that if the hotel have certain rights, then also ease on the restrictions or the prerequisites for labor as well, as in the Employment Act or the Industrial Relations Act, so to speed that up as well. So, because the main thing is we don't want our members, our workers, or any worker in this country to suffer, okay? We don't want them to suffer at all. Now, we know that they had a little bit of assistance, but we all know that their pay was cut almost to 50%, some almost 100% lost. But so we did ask also, if you're going to allow the easement of the employers, also provide the same commensurate easement to workers as well.
All right, fair enough. Well,
you know what? And see, that's I think we just need a balance because I'm not against foreign investment. I'm not against Atlantis. I mean, I've worked at Atlantis for 26 years, and I must say, under Saul Kirshner, God bless his soul, that Atlantis was the lead hotel. I mean, they led in a professional way. They did everything. Everything was like done properly. I'm a little bit surprised the way how they've been conducting business, especially as relates to the furlough and the redundancy since Brooksfield took over. But, you know, I was proud to work there. But we need balance. We give these investors a lot of concessions. We need to let them understand that once you come to do business in the Bahamas, we have a union, we have laws, and we have to make sure that the table is balanced. We cannot continue to allow foreign investors to come in our country, make millions, and yes, they provide employment, and it's good for our country, but at the end of the day, we cannot stand by and let the workers be exploited and mistreated. And yeah. And our laws are on the book and it's just being violated without any consequences. Or nobody's saying anything about it.
Absolutely. And, you know, these companies aren't naive. They work in world markets. There's unions exist in every major city on earth, you know. Good afternoon. Welcome to the revolution. Good afternoon. Are you there? Hello. Good afternoon.
Hi, Ron. How are you?
Hey, I'm great. How's it going?
Hi, I'm Dave Beckford.
Hey, I know that voice.
Hi, Mr. Evans. How you doing?
We good.
What I don't get, right, before I say anything, one, you think Anton someday could run as a
Leave Anton. He wait 2 weeks to say he was right. Leave him. Let him make his day. Let him ride. That's fine. No problem.
No, I would like to see, you know, let him put his foot in that shoe.
No.
See how it is, man. See my Lord. Anyhow, what I call to say, right, is the government has an emergency order in place for the hotel workers. When Atlantis was putting this in their agreement, I find it hard to believe that the government haven't sit down with them and reviewed this or had knowledge of what was supposed to be. As far as paying these people, they pay in full, okay? Now, I think it was Mr. Evans who said earlier the minister or who was it, tourism or labor? Was talking. What was it, labor or tourism?
I think Bedford mentioned the minister.
Pardon me?
I think Bethan mentioned the Minister of Tourism said something, but I also mentioned something about the Minister of Labor.
We would have had a conversation with the minister.
Yeah, you could hear me?
We're having problems, Aaron.
You can
okay, just...
You want me to repeat what I said? She can hear me?
I don't know. I think we're having a problem. If you get some changes to our board, and so it's
yeah, yeah, yeah. I was saying that when I first heard it, I called the minister and I asked him about the 30-day penalty. He said, Mr. Evans, they told me about it prior to the 30 days, so the 30 days falls away. I said, okay, then. Since they had prior discussions with you, they were telling you they were going to let the persons go. And so that was my understanding from him. All right, but he also agreed that they should have been paid promptly in full.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so I was only suggesting that if they only had X amount of money, they should have dealt with those person that could have covered that X amount of money so they could let those person go fully compensated. And the others, leave them on staff so that their remuneration, their benefits could continue to pile up until they found the money to separate the remainder of the persons. Yeah.
So we only have a minute left. Unfortunately, and since this is Labor Week, I'm hoping you guys can come back to us and we can continue our discussion because we haven't talked about the workers' agenda.
No, we haven't.
We haven't talked. I want to talk about this transitioning of labor leaders into government office.
Yes.
I find that's a current trend.
How soon could we come back to talk about
I would say, how's your Thursday?
Thursday?
Yeah. I want to do Thursday, second hour.
Just want to send a shout out to the nurses. You know, this month was dedicated to Nurses Month. So shout out to Amantha William and Nurses Union and the healthcare workers. We want to thank them.
Yeah, we got a lot to cover.
For doing the best they can.
In fact, come for 12.
12 on Thursday?
Thursday, and we'll make a show of it, okay?
Great.
All right. Thanks so much to Bernard Evans and Dave Beckford for coming through. And speaking about this issue today, we only got to the meat of one issue, really. Yeah, yeah. And I want to cover a lot more of these labor issues because the landscape has changed over the past year and a half. So definitely, you know, we're going to have to look at what the future of this looks like moving forward. All right, that's going to do it. That's all the time we got today, but I'm going to see you again on Thursday. So, you guys out there, take care and have a great day, Bahamas. Yeah, that blew by.
Of Juan McCartney is sponsored by Fidelity Bank Bahamas, J.S. Johnson, Commonwealth Bank, Bahamas Bus and Truck, Burger King, Ron's Electric Motors, Popeyes, and Bonneville Bones.